Welcome to the eSuccess Method Podcast with Jacob and Aaron, your weekly dose of tips and tricks to achieve excellent performance in your business and career. Join us as we explore deeper into the practical world of Lean, Six Sigma, project management, and design thinking. In this episode number 146, we get back to Completely Intentional, part two of our mistake-proofing series. If you like this episode, be sure to click the like link in the show notes. It's easy. Just tap our logo, click, and you're done. Tap, click, done. Here we go.
Seek out the root cause of an error.
Mm-hmm. I think that's standard.
Start now and don't wait for perfection.
I haven't heard that, but it's probably something that I might have practiced.
I think that's the key, really, is if you don't even think about all the rest of it, is too many times, and this might get into the over-engineering part, we overcomplicate the solutions we try to implement, or we find reasons why something simple can't work. And this is, hey, if it's got a small opportunity to work and it's kind of low risk, give it a shot now. See if it does work.
Yeah. And again, this is where, you know, it's part of the empowerment. It's a part of something else also. It's where you should be allowed to try something. And if it fails, it fails. You know, you shouldn't hold somebody saying, I told you so, or you shouldn't have tried that. That sort of encouragement, discouragement model becomes very critical to build a process or a model of continuous improvement within your teams.
Mm-hmm. You got any mistake proofs you've put in place in your life?
At home or?
Everyday life.
Everyday life. Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a bad habit of always forgetting keys somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So now I think I've set up myself a conscious system that if I don't have keys and my cell phone in my pocket before I leave home, keys, cell phone, wallet, three things. If I don't have it in my pocket, I feel like something's not right. So it's something that I don't know if that's a system or if it's a mental check that I do every time I get up.
You do the triple check like I do?
I don't know about triple check, but yeah, it's like my right pocket has my keys and my wallet, and my left pocket should have my phone. So if something doesn't feel right, then I'm missing something.
So I've gotten into a strange sort of habit too, where every time I stand up from a seat, mm-hmm. my hand goes to my hip, which is where my entrance badge would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to my pocket, which is where my phone is, and then my back pocket, which is where my wallet is. So I do the triple check. I'm calling it the triple check.
Yeah, I don't think I've given a name for it per se, but I just all that's gone. And the trouble is when I'm out of town or out of state and I'm using only public transportation and I don't have keys in my pocket, mm-hmm. I feel weird.
Right.
It's just out of sync for me. But anyway, so that's one thing I would say that I've done. I guess putting an alarm system and having the ability to control the alarm system with the phone app mm-hmm. is something that is mistake-proof for me because half the time I forget to alarm the house when I leave, so I use the app to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, so having that ability to do that is something there.
Maybe again, telling the whole world that you forget to set your house alarm is not a good thing to do.
It doesn't matter. There's nothing in my house. But, you know. I don't know if that's mistake-proofing because I haven't set a system to remind me that. So maybe that's not mistake-proofing. So I'll take that back. What else?
I think just the fact that we have alarms to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, in my case, there's three alarms because I keep snoozing it. So.
Well, my wife does, and that's one of the things with some mistake-proofs. Eventually, some of these you may just start defeating because my wife has mm-hmm. an app on her phone mm-hmm. where she has to wake up in the morning to shut off her alarm. She has to do math.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, it puts out math problems, and she has to solve for them. And so she has to actually wake up her brain to do it. But she's figured out how to do it without actually getting up, so it doesn't really help anymore.
I've heard of a similar sort of a thing. There is a alarm sort of a thing, which is literally like a pet. I think it's like a mouse.
Uh-huh.
And it's got memory built into it that every day this mouse goes to a different place and sits. So it's not like it's there in the same place that you cannot sleepwalk and shut it down. Mm-hmm. It's in a different spot.
Oh.
Every day. So you have to literally go find it to shut this thing down.
It's like a little robot that's running away from you as you're trying to shut it off.
Not as you're running. It's hiding in a different place and it's ringing every day. So you have to literally go find it to shut it off. So I've heard of that. You know, common examples that I say when I'm training is, you know, if anybody's familiar driving a stick shift car, unless you have the gear in neutral or you have the clutch and brake depressed simultaneously, you're not able to start the car.
Right.
I guess, you know, for folks who, you know, my mom used to always complain, turn the light off. I think it's for people like me that they have the sensors now to turn the light off themselves if there's nobody in the room or no activity in the room for a while.
So I worked at a company that had that in the men's room.
Uh-huh.
Only it seemed to shut off after, if there was like no motion for like 2 minutes, it would shut off. So I'd end up being in the men's stall and the lights would go out.
Nice.
That's no fun.
Well, you can take a nap in there.
So you have to wait for somebody else to come in so you can finish doing what you got to do.
That's funny.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so let's get back to this. Let's see. What do we got here? Oh, there are different levels of mistake proofing. Can you walk us through some of these?
Yeah, I think the first one is containment. I think I would say this is where you're identifying the defect before they move it to the next part. So this is that sort of a thing where, okay, I know this happened. It's here. It's evident. Let me do something before I – let me fix the issue before I send it somewhere else. Let's decide what the course of action needs to be before somebody else works on it. I think the other kind is detection. This is where, okay, as I'm doing this, I'm able to detect whether I made a mistake or not. Third kind is the prevention. This is if I try – even if I try to make a mistake, it's not going to let me make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three main ones that I would say. And then there's a fourth category that you've put together here, which is if it's a severity situation, if you cannot contain or prevent it, but does it really reduce the severity of the risk that could happen?
Right.
So in other words, you know, the example you have is airbags and seatbelts are not going to prevent an accident, but it's probably going to reduce the risk of you injuring yourself significantly more than what it would be if you didn't have those things.
Right. And you could make an argument that it's preventing the occurrence or death, the occurrence of death, depending on what you're considering the defect. Or, you know, but it's not addressing the root cause, which is an
bad
accident.
Yeah.
Or bad driving or you know, a squirrel in the road or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it is reducing the impact of the result of the accident or the symptoms of the root cause.
Yep.
And then I added one in there as well as perceptions. And when I started getting into the design and realizing that some of these things around design in customer experience, especially, you're not just designing to solve a problem. Sometimes you're designing to solve the perceptions around a problem. So mistake proofs can also be applied in order to address perceptions. And this classic design problem, I don't know if you had this in engineering school. I had it, I think, my first week of general engineering was to, the problem here is that a high-rise hotel tenants were complaining that the elevators are too slow and they wait too long in the lobby. And then we had a project where we had to come up with a solution to this issue. Have you heard this one before?
No, I have not.
So typically what happens is teams come up with really fancy ways. They either come up with some sort of high speed elevator or some sort of complex situation that allows one elevator to always be at one certain floor so that, and, you know, you split the building in half, which actually I think a lot of elevators do. Mm-hmm. But really it's almost to the chagrin of the engineers coming in who came up with all these really fancy solutions, and they said, no, the cheapest and, quote, best or most elegant solution here is to put mirrors in the lobby in order to keep tenants occupied while they're waiting. So they decided to engineer to manage the perception rather than to manage the root cause of, or to re-engineer the elevator.
Interesting. I've not heard this one.
So next time you're in a lobby with a bunch of mirrors, now you know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I know that I should wait a long time for the elevators.
You walk in here, it's like, crap, this is going to be a long elevator.
Yep.
So I did put together a collage of what are some everyday examples that we may have seen for mistake proofs. And I got these off of mistakeproof.com. I should actually put that in here. So what do you see in some of these? Sneeze guards.
Hmm.
Nobody would have thought of sneeze guards as a mistake proof, but they're trying to prevent something,
I guess.
Would you rather take the sneeze guards away?
Yeah.
Okay. I would rather not take the sneeze guards away. They are reducing the spread of germs in a public food buffet situation.
Sure.
You are listening to E6S Methods Podcast, brought to you by E6S Industries. Join us on our website at www.e6s-methods.com. Journey through success.
If you haven't checked it out already, be sure to go to our product page at e6s-methods.com. You'll find an assortment of unique templates and tools to help you, practitioner, be more effective in your work. From a SWOT analysis to our most popular cross-training matrix or our proprietary consultant's companion to our action register with automated risk alerts, you'll find these tools useful. If you don't, just ask for a refund. No hassle, no expiration. What makes these templates so special? It's simple. They already exist. They're easy to use and they work. You'll save hours or even days developing and formatting your own templates, all while helping to fund this free podcast. Check it out.
All right, how about this one? This thing on the school bus. Now, you didn't grow up here in the States, so I don't know I don't know what you had. You didn't even have school buses, did you?
I mean, I had a school bus, but I didn't have any of the fancy stop signs or anything else associated with it. And the little flagpole that comes to the side and shows everybody, well, I'm stopped, so you better stop too.
Well, yeah. So school buses here, when I was growing up, they had the flashing lights, which meant, hey, you better stop because there's kids coming out. That was the extent of the pokey-okey. And then they started, some of them started to flip out these stop signs. It says, no, we really mean it. But what is really interesting and new to me is this bar that swings out of the front of the school buses.
Yep, which
they didn't have when I was there, and the reasoning behind that is this child has to go around those because bus drivers were running over kids who they thought they had passed by the bus because kids would get off in big groups, and if one kid maybe dropped something in front of the bus, they'd start rolling and there'd be a kid under there. That was a big issue. So a couple of things are going on now. They're not. In my area, they don't do bus stops anymore. They drop kids off at every single house, which is annoying. But and they have these stop signs and these arms that swing out that forces a child to stay far enough away from the bus so that they can be seen by the bus driver.
Interesting.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
What else? Simple and elegant. This little tennis ball hanging from the ceiling.
I don't know if it's elegant, but it's simple.
It's elegant because it's simple.
Well,
do you need to install lasers and sonars in your garage to make sure you don't pull up too far?
No, I have a very much more elegant solution, which doesn't look as funny as a tennis ball hanging from the ceiling. It's basically a pen mark on the side so that my side mirror is lined next to
you
that.
Did it. All right, very good.
Yeah, that's what I've done.
So I did these tennis ball things in my garage because my grandparents had always done it. I was like, so my wife, she looks at me, she goes, I know how to park. And a couple days later, it was ripped down from the ceiling. She swears she didn't do it on purpose.
I mean that is equally good if you are parking in the same spot all the time.
Right.
If for some reason you decide to switch cars and you go there, that could be a big problem.
It's only for the exact size car that you got.
Exactly. So
this other one I thought is neat, and I never really would have thought that it was a mistake proof, and that's on the upper left, which is the men's bathroom stall. So if you think about a bathroom stall, most of your hooks are in the center, you know, if you want to hang your jacket. This particular one, they said, you know what? We have a problem for some real whatever reason. There's a problem with people leaving their stuff behind. So they actually aligned the hook so that you can't get to the door handle without removing whatever jacket is in place. So in order to prevent people from forgetting their jackets, they've essentially hung the jacket over what would be the handle to leave. Elegant, in my opinion.
Lost you.
What? Jacob? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hey.
Hey. I'm having a Skype problem on my computer.
It was you. Finally.
Yeah. So I'm answering you on my phone now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, still saying Internet Explorer plugin issue.
Oh, boy.
It's like I was talking to you till now. What's going on? Yeah. So we might have to resort to this for now.
All right, well...
I still am recording.
Okay.
So...
I mean, these were the ones which spoke to me. Any of these speak to you as being simple and elegant?
Again, the elegance part, but... I think the hospital one makes real sense.
Which one's this?
Especially, like, some of the wristband, you know?
Okay.
Where the patient has the wristband on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes total sense, especially if the patient is in a situation where he or she cannot speak. And, you know, you should know which is a patient you're going to give this medication to. And if that checks and balances exist by barcode scanning or something, I think that makes real sense. I mean, even the driving, you know, the reflectors at night, some of the streets that have those, in my opinion, that is a mistake proofing. So you don't go into the wrong lane or you know which lane you're supposed to be in.
So this one over here, those aren't the reflectors. I mean, that's a good mistake proof, but that's not one that I have on here. This is You have to count the number of dots between the vehicles, and that tells you if you got a good following distance.
Got it, man. I'll get ticketed for that.
So you when I say elegant, you don't derive elegance from simplicity the way I do.
No, I do not. It's all about the looks for me, right? When it comes to elegance.
So, also, I want to point out, you ever gotten any kind of surgery on your limbs or anything like that?
No, I haven't. I've been smart enough not to break any of those.
You haven't suffered from, I called it, for me, early onset OMD, which is early onset old man's disease.
I haven't got any of those yet.
I've had to go under the knife a few times. And one of the things that they did in surgery was get me to verify which limb they needed to do surgery on, my knee, and so that they didn't accidentally perform the surgery on the wrong knee.
That's nice of them.
So you actually have to do a signature, and you have to verify so many different times, because just the communication of, is it the right knee or the left knee? Is it your right? Is it my right? Is it his right? So they say, here, take a pen. Please sign the knee that requires the work.
Interesting.
All right, so there's a few other here, and some of them, you know, one of these, actually, I did notice one of the common mistakes that you might do in an email, say, oh, see the attachment, you know, attached is such and such, please take a look. Google and Gmail recognizes then that you've mentioned that there might be an attachment, and it if it doesn't have an attachment, it says, hey, you're missing your attachment. Do you want to include it?
Yep. Since all those alerts in the mind is already, when you send a subject, or when you send an email without a subject, or, you know, Google does a whole bunch of things now. When it sends you, if, you know, many a times I accept meetings and then it's like, do you want to add this to your calendar?
Right.
So that you get a reminder for it, you know. So they've done a lot of things that help people out.
Now, would you call that elegant?
Sure.
Okay.
Because it looks good on my calendar, I guess.
Well, or at least this, that it notices that you didn't have an attachment and it noticed that it thought you wanted one.
Yep.
I'll call that elegant.
Sure, I'll give it.
All right, so I put some software stuff in here because I know that's a lot of what you've been doing, and frankly, a lot of our listeners are working more with software than some of these other things. So what do you think about some of these software pokey-okies?
Yeah, between spell check and autocorrect, programming, syntax, error check. I'm not sure how much of that works, but maybe close without saving error message, undo, what is that?
That's just your undo button.
Undo button.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say in general prompts, anything that you can set, hey, or you can set business rules within your program to kind of help you with some of these identifying and putting it, that those are all, in my opinion, things there. You know, password hints, strength indicators, those are definitely good ones that are poke-yoked. And I don't know what the object-oriented programming is from stepping on each other's data. That part I'm not sure. But between unit testing and smoke testing, I think the concept is, in order to avoid the rework, can you do some of this work yourself rather than expect somebody else to do this for you? Smoke test is more when you are integrating, and this is making sure that, you know, you just added another piece of code. Can you make sure that what you added just now isn't breaking the 10 other things that already exist?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are definitely, in my opinion, mistake proofing sort of a checks and balance.
Yeah, so the object-oriented programming, again, I don't know much about it. I thought maybe you would, but it is referenced in this particular link, and that is included in the show notes if anybody wants to learn more about any of those key software mistake proofs. I'd say a lot of mistake proofs in software are probably kept behind the scenes, and we may not even recognize that they're occurring. I guess just the existence of Windows, of the Windows operating system, is a mistake proof over, you know, what used to be required for you to essentially write your own commands for everything you wanted to have done. The whole idea of point and click could have been a mistake proof, but it definitely was an innovation. We'll call it that.
Yep.
Right. So I guess in a nutshell, mistake proofs, we can see them in every day all around us. And sometimes they're associated with product designs, but often they're associated with in the services that we also encounter. And people should keep an eye out for those and look for opportunities to employ them in the work. If there's some sort of error going on time and time again, don't live with it. Find a way to eliminate it, or at least put something in place so that it's not so problematic. Jacob, you got anything else to add?
No, that's it, Aaron. And I'm sorry, but I have to cut off soon because I have a call to jump into.
Look at you. You need a mistake proof for that.
Yeah. My computer saying that I have Internet Explorer issues should be the culprit for that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
No problem, sir. Everybody have a good one, and talk to you soon, Aaron.
All right.
Thanks for listening to episode 146 of the eSuccess Methods podcast. Stay tuned for episode 147 with design thinker Lauren Miller, where she shares her experiences applying best practices in design to diabetes care. Don't forget to click like or dislike for this episode in the show notes. Tap, click, done. If you have a question, comment, or advice, leave a note in the comment section or contact us directly. Feel free to email me, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at e6s-methods.com or on our website. We reply to all messages. If you heard something you like, then clamor and share it. Don't forget you can find notes and graphics for all shows and more at www.e6s-methods.com. Journey through success. If not climbing up, you're falling down.